everybody. We're back. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food here on November 26th, and it's holiday time. I can't wait to get home because I'm cooking. I'm going to be cooking up a storm. I love Thanksgiving. I love Thanksgiving foods, and I'm going to be making my favorites. What are some of my favorites? Oh, I just realized that I left off one favorite from my menu that I put together this morning, and I'm going to have to add that in. But if you watch my Thanksgiving Celebration Feast food show at responsibilityandliving.com, I'm going to be making the cornbread and the cassoulet, which I love. Cassoulet is a white bean French dish, only I've taken the things in it that I don't really care for, like the variety of meats, and only left the good parts, the Dijon mustard and the vegetables and the Herbe de Provence, and it's a lovely dish. And we're going to be making our new Thanksgiving squash with polenta stuffing, which you can also see at responsibleeatingandliving.com. I'm going to whip up some pies, pumpkin and apple. I can't wait to get home and start cooking, but not yet. Not until we talk with Ricky Heller about naturally sweet and gluten-free, her new allergy-friendly vegan desserts cookbook. Ricky Heller is the voice behind the popular food blog RickyHeller.com, which celebrates sugar-free, gluten-free, allergy-friendly whole foods through a low-glycemic vegan lifestyle with over 600 foolproof recipes, humorous anecdotes, and comments from two chatty canines. The blog illustrates Ricky's philosophy that a healthy lifestyle can be sweet. In 2011, Diet, Dessert, and Dogs, the blog's name then, was nominated for the Shape Magazine Best Healthy Eating Blog and as Best Healthy Cooking Blog by The Kitchen in 2013. And now we're going to be talking about her latest cookbook, which was published in September and became an Amazon bestseller the day it was released. Woo-hoo-hoo! So let's talk more about that. Ricky, welcome to It's All About Food. How are you doing today?
Oh, fine. Thank you so much for that stellar introduction.
Oh,
wow.
Well, that's you. And there's a lot more about you that people can find where?
I'm at RickyHeller.com. That's my blog.
RickyHeller.com.
And basically, every form of social media, just look for Ricky Heller.
You're everywhere.
Yeah, all my pages, they're called Ricky Heller.
Okay, very good.
All and right. I must say, your menu for Thanksgiving sounds amazing.
Well, it's all gluten-free. Free or can be. I do use corn because I don't have a problem with corn. I don't have a problem with gluten either, but I like to make things gluten free. I love these foods, and Thanksgiving for me, it's an important holiday, and I've kind of taken a back seat to Thanksgiving for a few years, and I'm taking it back this year.
Good for you.
And I'm cooking. Okay, beautiful cookbook.
Thank you.
Beautiful pictures. We don't always see beautiful color pictures, so many of them in cookbooks these days, because people are cutting costs, and they didn't seem to want to cut costs for you. Why is that?
Oh, well, I didn't want to cut costs. I mean, I worked with the photographer, and I actually hired her. So we worked together, and she's a local Toronto photographer whose work I just thought was fantastic. So I sought her out and asked her. And as it turns out, this is her first cookbook.
Wow. Oh.
So really incredible photos.
Really?
And it was such a learning experience for me to work alongside her, because we actually photographed the food in my kitchen where I do all my blog photos. And I basically cooked up the stuff that we were going to photograph that day, and then we spent incredibly long days. I had no idea how long it takes to professionally set up and photograph food, but she was just a consummate professional, and I just love her work. I just think it's fantastic. So, and as well, Sellers is known, they've been known for many years as makers of beautiful coffee table books. Mm. So they know what they're doing. They really did, I think, just a stellar job. Just gorgeous.
Right. Okay, so just briefly, tell us briefly your story, how you got to where you are today. Everybody loves the personal story.
Sure. Well, I'm a sweets addict. That's how it all starts every time
sweets
I tell the story.
Addict. Yep.
You know, grew up in a house where there was always home-baked goods, and my sisters, I have two sisters, we're all kind of stuck on sweets. So that's fine if you are able to do this in moderation, but as I got older, it just became an addiction. I mean, really, it's the only way to put it. And I ended up being diagnosed with candida-related complex, or candida as it's called, which is an overgrowth of yeast in the body. The first time was in 1999, and I went on this very, very strict diet, which is designed to eliminate excess yeast and kill off the excess yeast so that you can return your body to its normal equilibrium.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that for 2 years. Everything was fine. I went to nutrition school. I was so fascinated by the process. Loved it. I was just doing so well for about 10 years. And then, I don't know, I guess I was feeling too good. So one holiday season, I just thought, oh, what the heck, I can have a piece of cake. And,
why not?
Just a regular cake with flour and sugar. And that was kind of like somebody who hadn't smoked for 10 years and then smoked a pack of cigarettes, you know, one night. So that, again, after about a year, I just went back to my old ways, and I was diagnosed again. But the second time, it was really, really much more severe, and I think I learned my lesson, you know, the second time. So it took a lot longer to get under control. I had to be much more strict with the diet. And I've basically come to accept that I will be on what I'm calling a maintenance form of this diet for the rest of my life. I will never eat white sugar again. And I can say that with quite a bit of confidence, because it's just not worth it for me. These recipes are the outgrowth of my learning how to cook and bake this way and not being willing to give up sweet treats.
I'm imagining the middle of Gone with the Wind, the movie. It's just before the intermission, and Scarlett O'Hara digs up a dirty carrot from her torn up old property,
right,
and she says, as God is my witness, I will never go hungry again. And I can see
right.
you going, as God is my witness, I will never eat white sugar again.
Exactly. Yeah, it's true. You know, I tell the story. I have my best friend, when we were in our late 20s, she quit smoking, and she said to me, I will never have a cigarette again for as long as I live. And I remember being incredulous and saying, how do you know that? How could you? I can't say that for sure. But you know what? When you're in that situation, you can say that for sure. So I have no desire to ever eat white sugar again.
Well, life is a mystery.
Yeah.
And we're all very, very similar in many, many ways, but we are still unique. And many people find that certain foods don't work for them.
Yeah.
And the beautiful thing is that this world is vast and full of variety, and there are so many different wonderful foods out there that we can literally have our cake and eat it too. And so you've put together a great book of treats and baked goods that you can eat.
Yeah, exactly. And I have to say, I mean, I don't know, you know, for people who don't know the book, the cover has a vanilla cupcake with chocolate buttercream frosting on it. So my purpose really with this book was to show people that you don't have to give up your favorite foods just because you've given up certain ingredients. And so a lot of the recipes are those classics that you'll find in any kitchen, except they've been revamped so that they have, you know, so that they're vegan, gluten-free, and no high glycemic sweeteners. And I think all of the recipes in the book but one are corn-free, and most are soy-free or can be soy-free as well. So you don't have to really forfeit the foods that you love just because you can't eat certain things.
Let's talk about most people today. Most people don't know what's in their food. How many times has everyone heard me say that? Most people have no idea what's in their food. And most of the food that they buy that's processed and packaged in their supermarkets is filled with things that they can't pronounce, that they don't know where it came from, that's man-made, not good for them, and they don't care. And that's why we're in this mess that we're in with health care and chronic diseases. So people don't know what's in their food, and they don't care. Now, for those of us who want to feel good and want to eat well and care, then, you know, we do a little education. And we're learning so many different things. And one of the things that I love about gluten-free baking, not necessarily that wheat is this big bad evil, although some people absolutely cannot eat it, is that there are so many other wonderful products out there. Let's live variety, the spice of life.
Oh, absolutely. And I have to say, I really enjoy baking a lot more now that I'm baking gluten-free. I had, you know, I like most people in North America who bake from scratch, I thought that everything was made with all-purpose wheat flour. You know, you can bake anything with that. And all of the recipes I'd made up to that point were made with one flour all the time. Whereas with gluten-free baking, you have multiple flours, and not only within each recipe, but the choice is so vast, and it depends on my mood, it depends on the specific recipe, whether it's something that I want to be delicate and light and fragile, or whether it's something I want to be dense and rustic and savory. You know, the different flavors, the different textures, it's just so much more interesting, and I enjoy it so much more because it's kind of a fun process now to decide on the flours. And if I don't, if I want to use an all-purpose flour, I can. But it's just, there's so much more variety, I find.
I agree. Now let's talk about these all-purpose gluten-free flours. Now one of the things that irks me, maybe you too, is in some cookbooks today, a lot of vegan cookbooks and maybe some others, they give a nod here and there in a recipe saying that this recipe can be made gluten-free, just substitute all-purpose gluten-free flour. And I'm like screaming inside because that's not fair. You can't just substitute an all-purpose gluten-free flour in most recipes that use wheat and expect to get something good.
Do you think?
Yeah, but it's not fair. And I don't know why they do it, because if somebody thought, okay, I'm going to make this recipe for somebody I care about who can't have gluten, and they make it and it's a disaster, Okay.
I've used my own all-purpose gluten-free flour mix in pretty much any recipe I've ever wanted to revamp, and I've had success with it. So I don't know if it depends on the mixture of flours within that particular, but the whole notion of a gluten-free, an all-purpose gluten-free flour mix is the idea that it should be able to be substituted one for one instead of wheat flour. And if it isn't, it's not a very well-constructed all-purpose mix, in my opinion.
For example, I use Bob's all-purpose gluten-free mix, but I don't want to use it for everything. You mentioned this in the book, that there are a variety of different flours, and some of them have different grains in them, some of them have beans in them, some of them are nut-based, and the ones that have beans in them, I prefer for savory dishes. It's hard, unless you're putting a lot of flavor and a lot of sweetener, it's hard to mask that beaniness.
And I have heard that from people. I mean, mine does have some garfava flour, but it's about, I think it's less than 25%. And I added that for a certain level of protein, because when I designed my all-purpose mix, I actually looked at the percentage of protein in all-purpose wheat flour, and I wanted to match that so that the texture would be similar when it was baked. But so it's not a huge amount, and I certainly don't notice it, and I've never had anyone that I've served baked goods to mention it. However, when I was testing for the book, there were about 2 out of the 29 testers who said they simply couldn't tolerate bean flour in any amount. They could taste it no matter how small the amount. So they actually went ahead, and one of them has her own mix that's all grain-based, and she used that all-purpose mix for all of the recipes, and they were fine.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm with you on that. I don't think you, especially with gluten-free flours, because there's so much choice, you don't have to use a particular mix if that doesn't appeal to you. There are always other options, and I think, you know, they can work just as well. And, you know, if I were doing something like a shortbread or a really light vanilla cake, I probably would just combine flours on their own rather than use my all-purpose mix in that case, just because of that issue. I'd want it to have a particular flavor and a particular texture.
I use sorghum flour, and I usually mix it with other things, but I love the taste of sorghum flour.
I like it too, yeah. My favorite is millet, I have to say. It's, to me, the one that's closest to wheat in terms of its neutrality, and it's light-colored, and so is sorghum, though, I guess. But I find that millet, for me, as the major flour in any mix, is usually my favorite.
Now, some of the things that scare people about gluten-free baking is they need to have more ingredients.
Mm-hmm. But not that many more.
I'm not afraid of it. I do it all the time, but I've heard it. I mean, even my partner, Gary, he's like, when he sees me combining my starches with my flours, and he's like, oh, it's just seems too complicated. But it isn't.
Well, I think if you have a good recipe and you can follow it, you know, that's one way to avoid that complication. But also, I think that's also why gluten-free, all-purpose gluten-free flour mixes were developed in the first place, so that people wouldn't have to go out and buy four different flours every time they want to bake something. You know, once you have the stock in your cupboard, though, you know, it's there. It's not any more difficult than pulling out your flour and your sugar for your regular baking, I find.
Well, just like everything in life, we need to be organized, we need to plan, and when you're cooking, you need to organize and you need to plan. And I don't know what your refrigerator looks like, but I love my refrigerator, and I have one shelf that is three jars, glass jars deep. I think it's 3 by 5 jars or something. They're pretty big, square-shaped jars, and they're filled with grains and flours. And I keep all my flours in there, and it's just whatever I want to make. I just go in there and I have everything, and I have backup in the freezer, and I happen to use Amazon.com, subscribe and save. I'm not promoting it, but it's just what I do. And I queue up all my flours, and I know that I'm going to get a case of them, whatever's out. And I always have everything. And I have brown rice flour, sorghum flour, tapioca starch and potato starch, buckwheat flour. I haven't used millet, and I really need to because I love the grain millet. And I read in your book that I can make my own flour.
Yeah, really easy. I don't even have a flour mill. I just grind it in a coffee grinder.
Yeah, I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
Exciting.
And that way, too, because flours can go rancid, especially when they're made from whole grains and they have the oils in them, they can go rancid pretty quickly. And so it's great that you store yours in the fridge and the freezer. When you're making your own, you can make only as much as you need at that time. And so they're much fresher, too.
I do that with oatmeal, make my oatmeal flour, and I do it with almonds, and you mentioned talking about doing that with almonds, too.
And you can do it with buckwheat. I had some buckwheat pancakes this morning. I just ground up some buckwheat, groats. It was great.
I have to do that, too. I get groats and I get flour, but I haven't tried grinding my own. I'm very excited.
A true foodie, yes. We get excited about these things.
Well, yeah, but, you know, I personally think this is what we should be getting excited about. And I was reading an article. I'm trying to catch up on my New York Times magazines. I'm a few weeks behind. I hate when I get behind. But it happens, and that's what holidays are for, catching up.
Sure.
But there was this one article about outsourcing in your personal life and focusing on the things that are important to you, and in the long run it's going to help you be successful in your career and make a lot of money. And so they were talking about outsourcing in terms of getting people to clean your house and pick up stuff for you and make your food. And there was something, I was knee-jerking all over the place because something about that I just didn't like. I really want people to find the time and make their own food. I think it's so important for their health and for social well-being.
I agree. Yeah. And there's some, for me anyway, there's something therapeutic about cooking and baking.
It's zen.
Yeah.
I find, you know, some people get stressed out about cooking and they shouldn't. They should become one.
Yeah, because really, what's the worst thing that can happen? You know, if it's really bad, well, you know, give it to your dog.
Well, that's the fun thing about it. You shouldn't be afraid. And if you have a recipe and it doesn't come out the way you expect, you can probably turn it into something else.
Yeah, I mean, there's that. I don't know if it's a cliche, but it's a common statement among chefs apparently that there are no mistakes in cooking, just new recipes.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that's happened many, many times.
To me, absolutely. But some of my favorite recipes were created that way. So.
Now, you don't eat white sugar or refined sugar or evaporated cane juice.
Right.
And you
nothing
found
from the sugar cane plant.
So do you think it's...
Although Sucanat, which is sugar cane natural, is a really healthful, unrefined sweetener, for me, it just simply triggers a reaction, and I just can't have it. And same thing with maple syrup. I used to love maple syrup, but it's very high on the glycemic index. It's like a 98 on the glycemic index. And for my metabolism right now, that's just not something I can tolerate.
Yeah, it's fascinating, and there's a lot of research going on about our digestive system. There's a lot of study about bacteria and what we have and what we don't have and what we start with at birth, and it's just fascinating, and we really don't know anything, and we're at the tip of the iceberg, and we have a lot more to learn.
And I know for me, I mean, at this point, I've learned enough about what happens to your body with candida, and I know my reactions to things. I'm still working at repopulating the good bacteria to the and healing what they call leaky gut, mm-hmm. so that my digestive system will be working at, you know, as well as it can again. And when that happens, then it's possible I may be able to tolerate some of those things again. But for now, I'm trying to just heal.
Yeah, but the point is, sure, it would be nice to, just because if somebody had something that you wanted to try, you know, you could have it, but you don't need it, and your life will be luscious and delicious even without using cane sugar or maple syrup.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there are so many things I eat anyway. I don't feel as if I'm missing any of my favorite foods, I have to say. The one thing, I missed it a little in the summer because I used to really enjoy a good gin and tonic in the summer, so I missed alcohol a bit, but it's not like I'm, you know, dreaming about wine every day or anything like that.
Okay, so the beginning of your book, there's a lot of muffin recipes, and I've always been a huge muffin fan, and like decades ago, I used to make muffins, and I was really good at, like, in 15 minutes putting all these different things together, and I would have muffins. And because there's something easy, I find, about muffins once you get the hang of it. Mm-hmm. And then I started making them gluten-free, too. And I it's great because the morning comes around, and I think, okay, what are we going to have for breakfast? And it's so empowering once you figure this out, folks, that and get over the fear that you can do this quickly, efficiently, and easily and make something wonderful and different almost every day.
Yep.
And I'm always making new muffin creations based on whatever I have in the house, but you have some very lovely ones here.
Well, thank you. And I mean, even just this morning, one of my favorite recipes, which is in the book, is the single-serve high-protein pancakes. Like, I'm a big fan of pancakes for breakfast. And to me, those pancakes are something that I can just whip together really quickly and easily. But that recipe, it makes two pancakes, and so it's perfect for one person, and it's sort of infinitely adaptable because you do grind your own grains in the coffee grinder, and I mix up the grains each time I make it so that it's a slightly different recipe. And from start to finish, like, I'm able to make it and sit down to eat within 10 minutes. So it's not anything that difficult or that complicated.
Yeah, it's just practice and organization.
Yeah.
I'm looking at, for this week, sweet potato chocolate chip mini muffins.
Mm. Now, those are a favorite.
you eat chocolate or you don't eat much chocolate?
I do eat chocolate, but when I eat chocolate, I have to buy unsweetened, and then I sweeten it myself.
Oh,
so
I
that
see.
Chocolate chip recipe, I did give readers the option to use chocolate chips because I know that there are, you know, there aren't that many people who can't have any chocolate at all, so, or any sugar at all. So when I make them, I use unsweetened carob chips, and I have to say they kind of look the same. And by the time you're eating the flavors all together, you're having a bite of this delicious muffin, you don't even realize often that it isn't chocolate, even though it's carob. So, and I like carob. So if I have a recipe like the chocolate chip cookies, there's a recipe in there for butterscotch oatmeal chocolate chip cookies. You know, my friends who make them use dairy-free chocolate chips, but I use the unsweetened carob chips, and they're great like that too.
So you're going to need to manufacture your own chocolate chips with a sweetener that works for you.
I think that the company that decides to create stevia sweetened chocolate chips is going to hit the jackpot. That's what I think.
Now let's talk about stevia for a minute.
Sure.
I interviewed a few years ago Jim May, who's the founder of Sweet Leaf Stevia. I learned from him that he calls it stevia.
I remember you telling me that, actually, now that you say it.
And I learned so much from that interview. I talk to different people every week, and yet there are a few interviews that just stay with me forever. That one fascinated me. Just in terms of what he went through to get this approved in this country, and now how so many other countries are jumping on the bandwagon and mixing their stevia products with other things.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get to the back where you recommend, or do you? Where do you get yours from?
Well, my favorite brand is New Naturals, and I also really, really like Sweet Leaf. I've just started using theirs as well.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, here in Canada, New Naturals is not yet available, but Sweet Leaf is. So it's great that we can now have all those wonderful flavors that they make. And I think what I do talk about in the book is that you really should avoid the ones that are combinations or extracts, so like Truvia, Purevia. I would not use those simply because they're not pure stevia.
Right, and those are the ones that are getting more of the supermarket share because they're associated with big conglomerates and corporations that have money and pull.
And because they can patent that because it's a combination of things, whereas you can't patent a plant.
God damn those patents.
So that's, you know, there's more money in it, obviously, you can patent it.
Was there a similar problem with stevia being approved in Canada like it was here in the United States?
Yeah, I mean, it still is considered an herbal supplement here.
Wow.
So you can buy it freely. It's in the health food stores, but they don't market it as a sweetener.
That's funny. Now, you sell and you grow and make hemp products in Canada, but we can't make them. We can't grow hemp here.
Is that so?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness, but you can sell it.
Well, we couldn't do that either, but a while back we were allowed to have hemp products.
Yeah, isn't that fascinating?
But I believe we still can't grow hemp.
Yeah, because Manitoba, one of the provinces out west, is really big. They're quite well known, I think, now for their hemp production. Hemp seeds.
It's a crazy world. Anyway, we just have like a minute left, so what's going on for you now next, Ricky Heller?
Oh, well, I've already started working on the next one. The next book is going to be a combination of savory and sweet, and it's going to run the gamut for more concentrating on candida and what you can eat on that diet. So that's where I'm looking toward at this point.
Very good. I love. Mm-hmm. I tend more towards savory. There was a transition point in my life where I lost my sweet tooth, and it was a good thing.
How lucky.
I was actually on a raw food diet for a couple of years, and during that time, the whispers in my ear to have a cookie and things went away.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, and now I drink a lot of green juice, and most of the time I crave more savory than sweet, which is, I'm happy about that.
I find that makes a huge difference. The more I eat green, the less I crave sweet.
Yeah, something like that. Well, Ricky, have a great Thanksgiving.
You too.
And I hope to see you sometime soon and share some good, naturally sweet, gluten-free bites, perhaps.
That would be wonderful. Next time I come to New York, I'm looking you up.
Let's do that. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you for joining
me
today.
Thank you so much.
On It's All About Food. Bye-bye. And I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. Have a really wonderful Thanksgiving holiday and Hanukkah if you celebrate it. Remember, save the oil for the lamp and bake those latkes. Don't fry them, okay? And have a delicious week. Bye-bye.